Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for September 8th, 2013. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, and joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, and we have our guest tonight from Arkansas, Mr. Drew Pritt. And Drew called in right off the bat, and so that's good because that means we're going to talk about Arkansas politics right off. Welcome to the Kudzu Vine, Drew.
Thanks a lot, and a big whoopoos or whoopig suey from Arkansas.
Yeah, you're promoting Arkansas, but it sounds like you're having kind of the faux pas that Arkansas State had that I read about with their uniforms last night.
Well, that's true, but I think it's good to actually see a winning football season for once here in Arkansas after what we've gone through. So,
yeah, Bobby Petrino is not popular in either of our states, I guess, after how he left both places. Well, let's go off of football and on to politics. And first off, Drew, since this is your first time on the Kudzu Vine, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your political background.
I've been working in politics for about 25 years here in Arkansas. I've traveled all around the country getting Democrats elected to office. One of my favorite things doing is defeating Republicans for a living. I actually ran for office myself in 2005, 2006 after working as an advisor for General Wesley Clark as a Democrat for lieutenant governor. I was one of many who ran out here. And since time, I'm as John Brown and John Y. Brown III and others would say I'm a recovering politician, but I still help Democrats get elected out here in Arkansas and enjoy just kind of a little bit of a quieter life, watching Arkansas Razorback football and just enjoying life out here in Arkansas.
Yeah, so you worked for General Clark. How was that experience? I didn't even realize that. And when you look at five.
I think working for General Clark is probably still to this day the greatest experience I ever had. He's a great man. We really missed something in not getting him elected to office as president. I think President Obama would have probably had an easier time in some of his foreign policy areas if General Clark was in his cabinet. But to work for him, he's a true gentleman and a true statesman. And Arkansas is proud to have him. He's just another one diamond that we have from out here.
Yes, and maybe I don't think that it's, you know, there's that ship has sailed, but maybe there's some type of office in Arkansas he could run for since that's his home state. Well, let's get into some of that politics. And probably one of the most interesting races you have there is the U.S. Senate race. Mark Pryor, he won office in 2002. I actually worked for his campaign. I did his website. And then he had an easy reelection in 2008, even though the president didn't necessarily do that well in Arkansas, and we'll get to that later. He did well. But then this looks like it's going to be one of the more tough races for an incumbent senator to defend. How do you see that race?
You know, this is very similar to the race that his father faced in 1984, run against a relatively new congressman at that time by the name of Ed Bethune. The prior name in the state of Arkansas is a brand name. It's kind of like the nun name you would have out there in Georgia, maybe a little bit stronger. You know, Mark's not going to be an easy incumbent to defeat. Part of the problem is that this Tom Cotton, he came onto the scene, got elected in the rural 4th Congressional District, which is this humongous congressional district. But, you know, he ran as a Gulf War veteran and whatnot, and you know, he was a hardline conservative and beat actually the party favorite at that time, a former Miss Arkansas who had worked for Governor Mike Huckabee by the name of Beth Ann Rankin. And but the thing is, people really don't know who Tom Cotton is. And after serving in Congress for a short time here, people still don't know who Tom Cotton is. And, you know, the Democrats, I think, did a smart thing by going on the offensive, by setting up a website called meettomcotton.com. They're starting to define who Tom Cotton is, making him part of the crazy right-wing Tea Party agenda, and that's going to really hurt him versus a lot of other southern states. Arkansas has always kind of had this proud political nature of being very independent in how they vote. I mean, they could vote for, and going back to that 84 race, they elected Ronald Reagan in a landslide for president, but turned around and reelected Mark's father, David Pryor, in a landslide as well over Ed Bethune, 58-42. So I think this is going to be a very hard-fought race. It's going to be a lot of money from the outside coming in, but in the end, I'm willing to say that Pryor takes the 54% of the vote when it's all said and done.
Okay, and that'd be a defend for the Democrats, which would be important. Before I pass it on, or before I go to another topic, Catherine, Tim, any questions about these U.S. Senate races? Tim?
Not for me, but I'm sure Tim has some.
Yeah. Yes, I do. You seem to indicate that Mark Pryor is not going to be that easy to beat. So you would disagree with the pundits who say around the nation, they point at the state of Arkansas, and they say Mark Pryor might be listed as the most vulnerable Democratic incumbent. Do you believe that's not correct?
I fully don't believe that's correct. And any time a political pundit from around the country tries to talk about Arkansas, I immediately give them discredit. it's kind of hard to I mean, let's not forget, in 1992 and 91, they discredited a little southern governor who was running for president, and he ended up being one of our better presidents that we've had in the modern day. But I think being all honest too, the other problem is this, is that I really don't see where Tom Cotton builds his base to beat Pryor. Pryor is got some strength in the 4th district, which Tom Cotton represents. He has a strong remaining following in the African American vote. And then you have to think in the 2nd congressional district, which is typically the more liberal district, he's going to do well. And if you go back and you look, the Pryors have always consistently run very strongly in the 3rd congressional district. The 1st is going to go strong for Pryor. That's the Delta. But in the 3rd, that's where the Republicans have their bread and butter. But if you can run strong up there, and Pryor always has, I just don't see where Cotton gets his votes to win it.
What about an arch conservative group like the Club for Growth with deep pockets? Are they going to make their presence felt in this race?
I think they may, but here's the thing. They kind of shot their wad in the last legislative races in 2010. And 2012 when they won the legislature for the first time. But the problem is that they had backed some candidates that were really radical, John Hubbard being one of them, who came to disdain with his book glorifying the Confederate past, and he actually lost his legislative seat. So, I mean, the Club for Growth is going to put their money in, that, no doubt about it. But once again, Arkansas is one of those type of states where we still have a lot of down-ballot races. And by down-ballot, I don't even mean lieutenant governor or anything. I mean we have down-ballot like county sheriff, county judge, that consistently are won in the Democratic primary. And you're going to see a lot of that courthouse crowd turning out for the Pryors, because the Pryor family has always delivered for the state of Arkansas. I think the Republicans would have been smarter to go with Tim Griffin from the 2nd Congressional District, or even more likely if they go on with Steve Womack, who had served in the National Guard and who is actually considered a moderate Republican by Southern standards. I think it would have been a much closer and potentially an upset. But Tom Cotton just, as as we say down here, that dog won't hunt, and this dog definitely needs to stay on the porch because he ain't gonna hunt.
Okay, thanks,
well, I'm not
sir,
sure.
David.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one of us is standing next to a bug zapper. I tried to mute my phone to make sure it wasn't me, and it wasn't me. But we apologize to the listeners. Well, let's get into Drew. I almost should ask this question first, but it's okay. That's how big that U.S. Senate race is. Tell us about the overall lay of the land in Arkansas. And the reason I ask that is because, well, Arkansas has deep Democratic roots and has a Democratic governor, has a Democratic U.S. senator, different officials statewide that a lot of southern states don't have. The president has actually done worse in Arkansas than a lot of other southern states that don't even have all these Democratic officials. Kind of tell us why that is and just what is the overall Democratic to Republican picture look like?
Right now it's still pretty muddled. I mean, here's the thing. When in the state of Arkansas, if you want to see the source of Democratic power, you have to look at our current governor. Our current governor, Mike Beebe, is one of the most popular governors in the state, not only just in the state, but within the nation. And he's done a tremendous job. We have education, which is always a bread and butter issue in the Deep South. We have gone from 48th, 47th to, you know, within the top 10, top 15th place in the nation. We've seen tremendous job growth down here. And, you know, a lot of times for a long time we just voted Democrat by habit. I think a lot of people don't want to admit that, but I think they voted Democrat by habit because my daddy was a Democrat, my granddaddy was a Democrat, I'm going to vote Democrat. The Republicans, I have to give them credit, came out, had, you know, used a few issues that were very key and you know, Obamacare, other issues that were up there. And they got some strength going. However, I think they're starting to lose momentum because this last legislative session, they could have solidified their strength here in the state, but they got tied down in some issues like a woman's right to choose, you know, passed a very controversial abortion bill, got into, you know, who has the right to marry, all these social issues. That really, you know, they were playing to their hard right base, but the fact is they lost a lot of independent votes. And that's where you win in this state is the independent voters. And that you've seen a lot of them turned off. I mean, I think you're going to see the Arkansas Senate right now, you have 21 Republicans, 14 Democrats. They have a chance to win that back, but it's going to take some threading of the needle, in my personal opinion. But the state house, you have a very narrow 51-48 with one Green Party member who's actually a former Harlem Globetrotter who is sitting in the legislature. And I think you're going to see the state house go back Democrat this time, I think at least by 10 seats. So, I mean, you're going to see that. We started the year off bad in terms of Democrats and seeing our state treasurer arrested by the FBI. A lot of very...
that's not good.
She was taking bribes in a pie box. It was looking bad for the Democrats. But, you know, the Republicans in the state of Arkansas have a history of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. And that has happened in the last week in terms of the fact that our lieutenant governor, who briefly ran to succeed Tom Cotton for Congress. He's dropped out of that race. Mark Darr, who was heading up Rick Perry's presidential bid in the state here, it's come out, thankfully, by a lot of research by a blogger by the name of Matt Campbell, who does Blue Hog Report. It has come out that Mark Darr has done, the lieutenant governor has done a lot of tremendous illegal charging the taxpayers of Arkansas from everything from a trout fishing expedition with his son to the state of Arkansas to gas for his car to reimbursing actually for campaign events to go for Rick Perry and then turned around and also charged his campaign committee. So he double dipped. number of other things. So I think our lieutenant governor is pretty close to being kicked out of office. So, and we've also seen the Republican sheriff of one of the large counties, Saline County, which is a swing county for us, got arrested for getting intoxicated in public. At first refused to leave office, and now he's had to resign for conduct unbecoming. The Republicans have really had a bad week when it comes to ethical or unethical behavior.
Well, you know, in Georgia, we know that even a sheriff in trouble is never fully in trouble, a la Victor Hill. Well, I tell you, but that's a whole other story. Now, I had other questions to ask, but I got to come back to something you said. Green Party Harlem Globetrotter elected official. Please tell us more. Yeah. That is interesting.
Arkansas has actually made the fact that we have twice now elected to our state legislature a Green Party candidate. First time was we had in North Little Rock, we had a former Teamster official named Richard Carroll, a gentleman who was white, who was actually elected in a majority African-American district, mainly because of the fact that the incumbent was caught having a sexual affair with an underage intern. That caused big brouhaha. Richard Carroll filed as a Green Party candidate, won the legislative seat. Unfortunately, was defeated by a Democrat next go-around. He was a good progressive that was in there. Then what happened this time was a gentleman by the name of Fred Smith. And Fred was a Harlem Globetrotter, like I said. And Fred had, you know, he's had his time, I guess you could say, in terms of the fact that it's in Arkansas's 54th House District, which is over in the, and which is also Chico County. And anyways, he served in the House before he was found guilty because he supposedly took $30,000 from a nonprofit organization he was involved with and put it into his personal account. And so initially he was found guilty of theft. He had to leave the state house. But the conviction was expunged in 2012, so he decided to run again. The chairman of the Democratic Party and everybody filed a lawsuit to keep him off the ballot. So Smith registered with the Green Party. Well, shortly thereafter, the Democrat who won, initially a guy by the name of Hudson Hallam, had to resign because he pleaded guilty to charges of conspiracy to commit voter fraud. They were basically passing out pints of alcohol and $50 bills to get him elected. And so once he was knocked off the ballot, the only person left was Smith. And so on election day, Smith got 100% of the vote, and he won himself a seat in the state legislature. Now, he thanks and due in part to Governor Beebe, I've understood, and some other people, he does caucus with the Democrats, but he votes his own way. And so, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing. It's also interesting because he also has a world's record, because he set the world's record for a vertical slam dunk at 11 feet, 11 inches.
Wow.
Only in Arkansas, right?
Yeah. That's a leap.
Interesting stuff to put there. Yeah, and of course, we know those Globetrotters love a one-sided contest, and 100% to zero gets you there. Well, Catherine, it seems like a good time for you to ask, as a follow-up question, your favorite questions about the status of the Democratic Party.
Yep, that's always my favorite question. How is the state of the Democratic Party in Arkansas? Is it strong? It seems like it would be.
You know, I serve on the executive committee, but I have to say that, I go back to what Will Rogers used to say, that, you know, I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. And that could definitely be said here in Arkansas. We have factions, but I have to say largely due to BB's influence, believe it or not, largely due to Pryor's influence. Everybody's kind of playing nice in the sandbox right now. So it'll be interesting to see how long that continues. But I think we're going to see it continue through the election.
Well, that's, you know, count your blessings. as one, I say coming from Georgia, it's good to all be unified. We are unified here more than we have been in the past. So we're happy about that.
Well, go back to something that y'all said, by the way. Y'all were talking about the president's approval rating. You know, President Obama just really is not a factor in this state. They didn't compete for the state. We tried to get them to. They wouldn't make a play for Arkansas. The whole time that the Obama organization has been in this state here, they've been largely separated from the Democratic Party apparatus. OSA seems to be its own little entity. And they try to reinvent the wheel. So, you know, I mean, the good Democrats will get out for a Democratic nominee, but at the same time, I think there would even be some people who would say that their president is still Bill Clinton. So, you know, President Obama's, you know, how he's portrayed here in the state. I mean, we're supportive of him as Democrats, but it's a non-issue as far as politics goes in this state.
Yes. Well, Tim, any follow-up questions on this line? Or Catherine,
yes, I do.
I'm good. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I was going to ask a follow-up question about Bill Clinton, since you kind of segue right into it. Now, he came to Arkansas, made big news all over the country to promote the Affordable Care Act. As popular as Bill Clinton remains in Arkansas, is he expected that he might take an active role in the statewide elections and campaign there next year?
Oh, I think so, and I'll tell you why. We have our de facto nominee for governor is a former state senator, former congressman, a blue dog by the name of Mike Ross. But as you know, in the Deep South, it's all about who you know. Mike Ross was the campaign driver, and I think if you follow politics in the South, you know how important of a role that job is. You know, it's a lot more important than it sounds like. Mike Ross was the campaign driver for Bill Clinton when Bill Clinton did his famous 1982 comeback bid over Jim Guy Tucker and Joe Purcell and then Governor Frank White. And then later when he was in the state Senate, Mike Ross was one of Bill Clinton's go-to guys. So I think between that and then the strong friendship that David Pryor and Mark Pryor have with Bill Clinton, we're going to be seeing a lot of the former president back here in this state. And I think the other thing, too, is that in preparation for if and when Hillary does run, and she did well in this state, you know, even though at that point the primary – it seemed like it was kind of a foregone conclusion, you know, in the presidential race. But at that point, I think you're going to see the president come back to make sure that we have a strong enough Democratic apparatus in this state so that, it's, you know, Arkansas is not going to have to be a worry. I think we might even, they haven't announced yet, but I think we may even see one or two of the House seats flip back to the Democrats and largely with the support of Bill Clinton. And I may want to mention, too, in 2000, Mike Ross was the only congressional candidate that Bill Clinton came out and campaigned for, and he came back in and helped Mike Ross switch the 4th Congressional District, which Tom Cotton holds now, to an upset victory over Jay Dickey back in 2000. So, you know,
okay,
we're going to be
well,
seeing Bill a lot.
I have one more question to ask you, and then I'm going to turn it back to David to take us home, and Catherine, if she has any more questions. But it's about one of those congressional races. You know, Bill Halter made a lot of news with his U.S. Senate campaign, his progressive U.S. Senate campaign, I might add. And now he may be seeking the 2nd District. If he does indeed pull the trigger, and run there, what sort of chance would he have to win?
He'd win it. He'd win it hands down. However, I'll be shocked if he runs. I think if we see Bill Halter come back, and by the way, I have varying views of Bill Halter, but I have to say I admire him from this last race that he made preemptively for governor. Bill Halter has a problem in the state of perception within the party, and that's the fact that when he first came back, he was run for governor in 2006, and he dropped out. And ran for lieutenant governor, but he made a lot of people mad running for governor against Mike Beebe, who had been kind of like the presumptive, you know, heir apparent, so to speak. And then when he ran for lieutenant governor, he made a whole heck of a lot who were running for lieutenant governor mad. And then when he challenged Blanche Lincoln, it made a lot of people mad. So for the second district, it would help the party. I strongly doubt if he's going to run. I think, you know, there was some more talk about him running in the open fourth for Tom Cotton's seat than for the second because he has property down there. I think it's more likely now we're going to see him come back in 2016 to challenge John Bozeman for U.S. Senate, but he's going to have to get past our retiring Attorney General Dustin McDaniel, who had a little bit of a scandal himself, but I think has recovered well with that. I think in the second congressional district, the names to be looking for right now that have a lot more support in terms of within the party favorites, Diane Curry, the Little Rock School District president, who made a short bid for lieutenant governor, John Edwards, who is General Clark's more or less right-hand man, who's a state senator, and Linda Tyler, a former state representative who ran for state senate against Jason Raper, that guy who did the controversial abortion bill. Those names are mentioned a lot more within the state than Bill Halter's. I think we're going to know next week at state committee meeting when Halter's going to run, but right now what I'm hearing from a lot of people is we'll be shocked if he pulls the trigger on that race at this point. But if he does, hey, even I will get behind him, you know. So.
All right. Excellent analysis on that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
David?
Yeah, well, since we've kind of gotten into those congressional districts, Drew, go ahead and kind of fill us in on each one. We can go in numeric order. And of course, you've already covered the second.
David, we're having trouble hearing you.
Are you on speakerphone, David?
Yeah, I'll change it around. Drew, since you started going over the congressional races, why don't we go ahead and finish that out? And you've covered the second, but if you want to go in any order you'd like, or you can start with the first one and go in numeric order.
I mean, I can go down to there. I mean, District 1, the big name that we're hearing out there is State Representative Joe Jett. I think if Joe Jett gets in that race, Rick Crawford needs to start looking for a home back here in Arkansas. You know, Clark Hall, who ran last time, former mayor of Marvel, state rep, farmer. I love Clark. I served with him on Delta Caucus Initiative. I think Clark would be a great candidate, but you know, when he got upset by Scott Ellington, I think that said something. But Joe Jett can kind of fool both the progressive elements, which is actually very strong in the Delta, will do well in the African-American community and also do well in the farming community and the courthouse crowd. So I think if Joe Jett gets in the first congressional district, Rick Crawford's a goner. Rick Crawford really is a misnomer anyways. The fact that he's gotten elected and reelected is just because of inter-party politics within the Democrats not playing nice in the sandbox, so to speak. You know, the first time he faces a truly united Democrat, he's toast. So, you know, Rick can go on to the House. Fourth congressional district, everybody and their mama's run as a Republican. You've got this guy, Bruce Westerman, who's the state House majority leader, which really means nothing to most people, and unless you're a politico here. But he was Fountain Lake School Board president. That means a little bit more than being a legislator, believe it or not. But he's going to have a lot of opposition. Beth Ann Rankin, who is Mike Huckabee's personal choice, I would say. She's a former Miss Arkansas. She's run twice in that district. She can raise money. She's got great potential. Then you got this funding energy executive by the name of Tommy Mole. And nobody really knows Tommy, but the fact is he can self-fund a race for Congress, and that should say a lot right there. And he's run on limited government, individual liberty, economic freedom. It's easy to say those things when you're a multimillionaire, but, you know, I think he's going to be a force to be reckoned with simply because of his checkbook. And then Lane Jean is another name, a state rep from down Magnolia, kind of has been like a mainstay in Republican Party politics, real active in the timber and real estate areas right there. You know, so you're going to have a – now on the Democratic side, you've got a few names that have been mentioned. Bobby Pierce is probably going to be the biggest name that's going to jump into that race if Bobby runs. You know, if Bobby gets in that race, I think he becomes kind of like Joe Jett in terms of the fact that he'll be the one who can unite all the factions of the Democratic Party and just come into that race and just win it hands down. If he doesn't, you know, there's a woman running by the name of Janice Percival. She's a nice person. Personally, I've met her so far, but she's a neophyte, and as such, you know, we're all neophytes when we first jump into a race. But I haven't really seen any institutional support. She's a college instructor and an author from Hot Springs. So, but she's the only one who is fully committed to the race at this point. You know, she's really got to make the step up. Jeff Wardlaw, who actually he and I used to ride the school bus together, state rep, he's a rancher, a farmer. Jeff jumps in that race. He's another one that would just win it hands down. Another name that is outside of the box, but I think she's somebody to be I guess you could say, reckoned with, is a former state representative that we have from up in the area right there. And her name's Leslie Milam Post. And Leslie is actually married to the scion of the Post Vineyard, Post Wineries. She was state representative. She's a mother. She's very well-spoken. She's fast on her feet. Like I said, another one who can put a large chunk of money in there. She's pretty. She's everything that you could want in a candidate. And she's close to our governor. So in terms of that, she was a strong supporter of his efforts in the state legislature when she served there. She got caught up in this whole effort with the Koch brothers and American for Prosperity. She jumps in that race. You know, any one of those three, Wardlaw, Post, or Pierce, and the 4th District will go back to its traditional Democratic roots. The final district that we have that we haven't mentioned is the 3rd Congressional District. Democrat has not been elected here since 1966. Bill Clinton ran here in 1974. 1996, we saw a woman by the name of Ann Henry come within 3 points. It was actually in her house that Bill Clinton got married to Hillary. We've seen some other candidates. Unfortunately, our last viable Democrat that we had up there who was running the last time around, come to find out he had lied about his military record and got caught in a huge scandal and dropped out, and really no other Democrats have stepped forward. It'll be interesting to see, but when the 3rd Congressional District goes Democrat, you know it's going to be a wave year and no other time. But the Democrats are starting to get very organized in the 3rd Congressional District. So, you know, but they're not there yet. But they could be this year, but I don't see it right now. So that's really what you're looking at this point right now in the congressional area. I think the two potentially three seats that will flip back have been traditionally Democrat. I think the first is almost definitely going to go back to Democrat, especially if Joe Jett runs. Look for the fourth and the second if we get a good, solid Democrat in there to flip. The second more likely than the fourth, just simply because the second has got Little Rock, and if you can win Little Rock, all you got to do is do well in the outer areas like Vixen and I are doing, you win.
Yeah, and I tell you, talking about that seat that hadn't been Democratic since 66, if it couldn't go Democratic in 96, I don't think off year like 2014 has the best odds. Well, just one final question I have, and then Catherine and Tim can ask you anything else they want. You mentioned Mike Ross in the governor's race. What's the Republican side of that governor's race look like?
Oh, first of all, sad would be the first word that comes to mind. You would think with all the aims that they have had or gains that they have made as Republicans, you'd think you'd see a whole bunch of good Republicans running. But if you remember the old fairy tale of Wink and Blink and the Nod, that describes the three Republicans running this time. You have Asa Hutchinson, who has lost more times statewide than anybody that we know. He's lost four statewide bids. He lost a bid for U.S. Senate, for Attorney General, for Governor, and another bid for Attorney General. He was a congressman. He's the favorite right now. But you have two other Republicans. You have Curtis Coleman, who ran for U.S. Senate, who's a Baptist minister like Mike Huckabee, trying to kind of come up. The problem with Curtis is when he ran for U.S. Senate, he said he needed a passport to visit Southeast Arkansas. Well, that's where about half of your votes as Republicans are at. So he's really kind of not kind of made ground sense. And then you have this Deborah Hobbs, who nobody's really listening to what I'm saying, but because she's really been considered a lightweight in the state legislature, but she has the potential to become the Arkansas version of Sarah Palin, both in terms of the fact that she could run a race for governor like Sarah did and come out of nowhere. And, in fact, we have heard that the people who did Sarah Palin's race are doing Deborah's race for governor now. But she also has a penchant for making crazy statements like Sarah Palin did. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if she becomes one of the Mama Grizzlies. I wouldn't put her in the same league as Nikki Haley. I still keep her where Christine O'Donnell is at right now. But the funny thing is, in terms of money, I think Ace has raised like 100 or 200 grand. Deborah's raised like 75, 85 grand. Curtis Coleman languished like 50 grand. Mike Ross has 2 million right now. And to top that all off, Governor Beebe is doing $1,000 a plate. Well, it's $1,000 to get into the VIP reception, $4,000 contribution to get as a host status, or just $100 if you want to go on Saturday, September 21st for Mike Ross. It's the Democrats' traditional blue jeans, boots, barbecue, and they add it with Beebe. The thing is, on the host committee, now if you can do some quick math right here, on the host committee right here, if it's 4,000, there's over 250 names that have already chunked up, and pretty much every single Democrat from Diane Curry, names that you haven't heard in a while, like Scott Ferguson, who ran for Senate back in 98, Nate Coulter, who ran for Lieutenant Governor against Mike Huckabee and was the first Democrat to lose that. The Bumpers, Brent Bumpers, Dale Bumpers, his son, is a host. Every single Democrat you can imagine is on this here, liberal, conservative, and everywhere in between. So I think, and not to mention James Lee Witt and the Clark, so I think you're going to see Mike Ross may hit 4 million, 5 million by September. And that's just tremendous to have right now at this point.
Yeah, because obviously Arkansas TV is not what a lot of states' TV is to buy. Well, before I let you go, Drew, Catherine, Tim, any other questions on Arkansas politics?
Not for me. You've been very thorough. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I do have just one more. In looking back, we saw the slaughter in 2010. All over. In looking back in the state of Arkansas that year, would you now say, considering that we have a brighter future in Arkansas than we had first thought, that perhaps the election of 2010 there was an anomaly?
Oh, yeah, I definitely would say that. Our land commissioner, for instance, who is another Baptist minister, John Thurston, raised $50,000 to, like, I think it was $300,000 raised by the Democrats and won. That should tell you where you're at right there. I think you're going to see the state treasurer's office is going to go Republican. We can thank Martha Schaffner with her pie box for that one right there. State auditor right now, I think you're going to see that go Republican too, just simply because Andrea Lee is going to be a force to be reckoned with in Arkansas politics. Land commissioner, unless we get a good Democrat to run, you know, John Thurston goes back in. But I think you're going to see the attorney general is going to remain Democrat. The secretary of state's office, I think, is going to flip. We have a wonderful Democrat running by the name of Susan Inman. She's definitely somebody to check out, somebody to watch. She was the state election commission chair and the former state election division director. She's going to run circles around Mark Martin. He's going to wish that he had a race car like his famous namesake there. Lieutenant Governor's race, John Burkhalter, state highway commissioner, he's self-funding this race. John's a great guy with a great story in what he's done for people who are less fortunate. And Mike Ross wins that. I think you see Mark Pryor win. I think we pick up a congressional or two. We pick up at least one house, potentially both houses of the legislature. I think Mike Ross is going to help us pick up both. I think you're going to see Arkansas go back to its roots. I think you could even potentially see, with the strength of Ross and Pryor, you can see some of these other Republicans who would traditionally be a lot stronger being swept under. Let's not forget that the best example of Arkansas politics is this, is 1968. We supported George Wallace overwhelmingly for president, but then we supported J. William Fulbright, a liberal Democrat, for U.S. Senate, and then turned around and supported Win Rockefeller for governor when it was every 2 years it was a presidential election year. Arkansans are fiercely independent. The problem with the Republicans is they've drank their own Kool-Aid, so you're seeing multiple Republicans primarying each other. The difference is this, is that we know how to come back together as Democrats after a primary. Republicans don't. And you see a huge fight between the Tea Party and what they call the Rockefeller Republicans here. And I think when it's all said and done, 2010 will just kind of be like the early 1990s were for the Republican Party. You'll see a blip on the radar. We'll go back to being Democratic. And, you know, I think Arkansas is going to be, you know, once again, the firewall for Democrats in the South. And, if I were a Republican, I would be trying to get – I think the last thing that they need to do is to be resting on what happened in 2010 and 2012. I think what they need to be doing is what Democrats are doing right now, is organizing at the county level, organizing at the district level, because, you know, once again, those courthouse races is where you win or lose a statewide bid, and the Republicans have just never understood that. They look at the bigger picture, and that's why you don't see them make the growth. I mean, they're in Georgia. That's where I have to give credit to the Republicans, is that they won these small little races like commissioner races and whatnot, and that's where you got these Republicans to come up and win the bigger races. Although, personally, I have to say, I don't know, y'all may know this better than me about Georgia politics, but I'd love to see Jason Carter follow in his granddaddy's steps and win the governorship back for the Democrats.
Oh, yeah, he is a solid man, Jason is, and he has three admirers, strong admirers on this show. David?
Well, you can count me as the fourth one, and I'll even send him a little donation from Arkansas.
All right. David, go ahead.
Well, Drew, thanks again for being on the Kudzu Vine, and we need to talk about Arkansas politics again closer to November, or actually, I guess, November 2014. We'll call you up.
Well, and I hope you'll call me even before then. Don't forget our primaries are in May, and our filing is in February, March. So I'm sure there will be some more changes before then, but I definitely would love to be on any time you'll have me.
Certainly so.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it was good to have on Drew. He was definitely thorough and optimistic about Democrats' chances. There's no doubt about that. Well, he mentioned Nikki Haley, and, of course, he said, and he mentioned the candidate out there being not in the league with Nikki Haley. And after this past week, I'm not sure if that's a good or bad thing. It said she locked herself out of the house. Now, you know what? We've all locked ourselves out of a house or a car. I don't think we're locking ourselves out of the house, but I've locked myself out of my car, so I'm not, you know, I'm not going to make fun of that. Everybody does that. But the two things I thought were kind of strange is, one, if you do it, you don't necessarily want everybody to know. So you don't post it on Facebook. But then more importantly, if you live in the governor's mansion, usually those places have 24/7 security. I'm calling BS. I really don't know that with security on site all the time, you can truly lock yourself out of your house. Catherine, what do you think here? You think this is true?
I thought that was a little bit crazy. I was like, I mean, I could see if she didn't live in a governor's mansion, she locked herself out of the house. But locking yourself out of the governor's mansion. But the thing that I thought was surprising was, well, so she goes out in her robe to get, she was getting her newspaper, right?
No, to get her on the school bus. Yeah.
Okay, and that makes more sense. I mean, somebody could have brought a newspaper to her, but, you know,
she's putting her kids on the bus in her bathrobe? She's the governor. What the heck is she doing in her bathrobe?
Yeah, that's kind of strange in your bathrobe. I mean,
I'm sure it was a very nice bathrobe, but I'm sorry, I just don't see that. I mean, I think there's all kinds of...
You should be getting dressed to go to school. You should be getting dressed to go to work. Even if you do work at your house. I mean, we'd all love to work at our house, but we're just not the governor like she is.
Yeah, I think the whole thing was weird. I agree that why would you put that on Twitter or Facebook or whatever? I mean, it would be one thing to say it later, you know, thanks to the, I'm so thankful I have this, you know, XYZ security guy who let me back into my house when I locked myself out. But to say it... to do it, like, while it's happening, I think it's very strange. And I think to say that you are in your robe is very strange. It's not very, it doesn't really convey the, you know, sort of, what's the word, decorum of the office, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess, Tim, the good news is at least they could find her in her bathrobe. She was on the property, not off in Argentina or hiking.
Yeah,
in the
really.
Appalachian Mountains, like her predecessor. Tell me.
I have 2 points. Number one, I have to say that I disagree with her idea of putting it on Facebook. It's probably not the best idea to put something like that on there where a little over 1 billion people can have public access to it to read it. And number two, There is one thing. Nikki Haley is probably one of the few Republicans in this country that I would actually like to see in her bathroom. I just thought I would throw that out there for your consideration, David. You know what I mean, buddy?
Well, I'll just leave that with you with that comment. But it's just kind of strange. And let's talk about the politics of this. Let's say this is a bit contrived. And I think all of us think it's contrived at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
What does she gain out of this? I mean, I guess it's like, oh, I'm just like everybody else, but really?
That's it.
I don't
That's
see how
it.
It's helpful.
I'm your regular person that locked themselves out of their house, folks. Catherine already said it. That's the
right.
Exact
but then you don't say, okay, if that's the case, then you don't say you locked yourself out of the governor's mansion.
Yeah, the
you
house
say you locked yourself out of the
better.
House.
Yeah, that
some crazy stuff there. Well, let's kind of move on. Talking to somebody that wants to be in the governor, two people actually want to be in the governor's mansion of Virginia just so they can get the honor of locking themselves out, Terry McAuliffe and Ken Cuccinelli. Rasmussen reports, which is pretty much, you know, leans Republican. Obviously, the Republicans are in the polls now that they would contend that they don't bias the polls, and maybe some of the polls they do are just good scientific research, hopefully so. But anyway, when you're a Democrat and you're leading a Rasmussen poll
by 7%, and this thing is just a few months away. This thing is not looking good for Ken Cuccinelli, is it, Tim?
It's not looking good for him at all. Multiple polls have all shown McAuliffe with a low to high single digits lead. So he is definitely winning with a small, steady lead. I don't recall if there, I don't believe there's been a public poll this year that has shown Cuccinelli ahead. I really think that the people the GOP have nominated provide the Democrats with a real chance to run the table there, guys. I do.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they're going to win all three major races there.
Yeah, I guess, you know, they always talk about not being able to make a second impression. Well, Terry McAuliffe definitely has made a second impression with Virginia voters. I didn't know if they'd ever warm up to him, but obviously they have. I guess he just stayed at it, met enough people, and, of course, more than anything, just met the right opponent. Right, Catherine?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm not so sure they're warming up to him as much as they're not liking Cuccinelli. I don't know. I'm not there, but I think it's pretty hard to warm up to Terry McAuliffe.
Yeah, sometimes in sports, people say, hey, how good are y'all? It's not that we're so good. It's who we're facing. It's worse.
Yeah.
And you'll take that every time. Well,
oh, come on. We got to talk about the other governor's race.
Is
it governor
or
governor?
Yeah, well, I mean, and let's get to that. And John Barge decided he'd run for governor. We talked about last week about how that's going to be a difficult race, and then, of course, he lost his website, and the word governor was wrong. Now, here's the thing. I think if, like, a Rick Perry or somebody did that, then it would be a big deal because he's seen as dumb. John Barge has his doctorate. I don't think anybody thinks he's dumb. Now, of course, we talked about the fact that he needs everything in this race to go right for him, and obviously this didn't go right. But I don't think it hurts him as much because he has a doctorate. I mean, it's probably a very earned doctorate and that kind of thing. So I think he'll be a little more inoculated because of that. But then
I absolutely
think it's
going to
matter
you.
Either way. Because
I absolutely disagree with you about that.
Okay, go ahead.
I think that when you're smart, you're expected to be smart. You know, we expect that from someone who's not as well-educated, but for someone who's well-educated to allow something like that to happen, I think we are much less tolerant of that. I am.
Well,
he's a smart guy. How did that happen? How did he not look at the website before it went up? How did he hire people?
His advisors are obviously, he's got to look at his campaign team, if that, because not only was the website's probably done by more than one person, sometimes you have a team looking at it, then you have probably your campaign manager, you probably have somebody else in your campaign checking through that, you know, you, your wife. I mean, there should have been all these checks. Now, if we came out and found out, you know, only one person looked at the stupid thing, or they said law.
Well, then that's bad judgment.
That was not good planning.
His rollout didn't go so well either. I mean, his, you know, the comments that he made. I read the, you know, AJC article, like whatever it was. He didn't sound very confident. Like he didn't have answers to some of the questions. He said at one point. At one point, he said, "Well, I don't know very much about that." I said, "Well, that's not a very. I'm gonna get a panel of experts. Oh, how tired are we all of blue ribbon committees? Right? I mean, they never accomplish anything."
And this is the idea I get. I get this is a guy that knows a lot about education, which is obviously one of the most important, maybe in some ways the most important issue. But he probably hadn't spent a lot of time on other issues. That's why, to me, my plan of saying, look, I'm going to run for this thing in 6 years and run at it from a totally different way is a better tact. And, I mean, his whole rollout was like, I'm going to be a defender of public education. There's all this talk about public education. It would be great for a Democrat. It's going to go nowhere in the Republican primary. Tim, your thoughts on this whole thing?
I don't think he's ready for prime time. I just see no way he can win. He doesn't have the money to match Governor Deal. The GOP establishment is with Governor Deal. And the average Republican primary voter, you've already alluded to that, does not even agree with Barge on many components of his signature issue, which is education. He seems like a one-dimensional candidate. He picked a terrible year to run. I still think his clear thought was clouded by his intense dislike of the governor and wanting to get back at him in some way. And he has, I think, ruined himself. And what is it Stephen Colbert said at the White House Correspondents' Dinner? Reality has a well-known liberal bias. You know, I'm afraid this liberal's giving, you know, Superintendent Barge a dose of reality. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's just not a good situation. But the fact that he misspelled governor, it certainly doesn't help anything. But I don't think it's going to be this death knell, if you will.
I don't think it's a death knell, but I think it's indicative of a poorly executed, rollout. And I think that, you know, we all know how important it is, you know, like we were talking about earlier about Terry McAuliffe, you know, you only have one chance to give the first impression.
And his first impression is not that good. Yeah, the perception of a campaign in disarray, David.
Yeah, the big difference is Terry McAuliffe knows how to raise money. He loses, he can still raise money. There's no money in education. I mean, you know, it's just not a good fundraising base, which is a sad state of affairs in American politics. But if you can't raise money, you can't, you know, really get your campaign off the ground, particularly when you're having to beat an incumbent that is not unpopular with his base. Now,
right.
Could he be?
Right.
Sure, I could come up with some things that I don't like about him, but I'm not the base of the Republican primary.
Right.
Well, let's try to get one more topic in. Lamar Alexander, he's avoided the wrath of Cain, but Kent, and I know the name has kooky in it, kookily. I almost have to pull my phone away from my face to see this thing. He is going to challenge Lamar Alexander, so now he has multiple candidates challenging himself. Do enough of these people push him into a runoff, push him to primary defeat, Tim?
Well, the more challengers he gets, the less likely he would be to avoid a runoff. But still, he needs one more thing, David. He needs that big name challenger that his detractors can kind of coalesce around. He can be pushed into a runoff, but he's still got to have that big-name challenger that can take it all the way and beat him. Right now, I'm just seeing really fringe people, and it's just not quite there yet. But if they smell blood in the water, somebody will come forward.
I absolutely agree.
And that's the thing there in Tennessee. Because Phil Bredesen was the governor until recently, you got the current governor, but he's got to run for re-election. And then
right.
The other names are blasts from the past. I mean, Bill Frist or Fred Thompson, who left the Senate to run for president. And Bill Frist did leave the Senate, planned to leave to run for president. He just never made the run. And obviously Fred Thompson ran one of the worst presidential campaigns in recent memory. Those folks probably aren't going to backtrack and try to win their Senate seat back from a guy that they both served with, I think it both at one time, in Lamar Alexander. So he may just get lucky because they don't have much of a bench up there, unless Marsha Blackburn, I think,
that's
if she decided
one.
To
that's
run,
the one.
She's the
that's
name
the
that could take him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Well, guys, I tell you what, with about less than a minute on the clock, I don't think we can get on the topic, but we had a good show with Drew Pritt from Arkansas coming on. And until next week, it's been the Kudzu Vine.
Okay, good night, guys.
Good night, guys.
Bye, everybody.